Hi, guys. It's me, Duncan. Thank you for tuning in to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour. A big hello to Julian Assange and to the Russian punk band Pussy Riot and to any other information martyrs that have gotten backed into the corner by the male dominator culture slash military industrial complex slash vile Mordor ogres who desperately want to keep this planet wrapped up in fear chains. It's basically people who are terrified of orgasms have somehow managed to worm their way into the seats of power, and it's resulted in a kind of vile week for news. The last few weeks, the news seems to have been written by an angel dust-addled trailer Satanist. Terrifying stuff on one level. The military-industrial complex is about to drag Assange kicking and screaming out of that embassy and into the depths of an Illuminati prison. And apparently some private corporations are using a web of cameras with facial recognition technology to track and mark us like cattle in some massive energy-sucking vampiric slaughterhouse. Not to mention the fact that the people who are monitoring us in this new program called Trapwire are named after the Gnostic chicken-headed god Abraxas. Look it up. It's really weird. And while all this is going on, Romney and Ryan are parading around the country like evil characters from Dynasty, and Obama seems to be spending most of his time at beer booths at county fairs. Plus, it's a goddamn heat wave, which means that the overheated balls of American men are festering like horrific hairy fruit hanging down from the branches of some horrible hell tree in a Resident Evil movie. The news has become a technological Medusa, and paying any attention to it can cause you to freeze. Can cause you to freeze up in a kind of Cheetos coma, where you find yourself holed up in your house, burrowed deep into your couch, rubbing Cheetos dust into the folds of your love handles and trying to forget about everything. Don't let the news do this to you. It's easy to forget that the news is not an altruistic information-sharing medium, but a vile form of entertainment designed to sell cars to get people back and forth to work, and Viagra to help them spawn. The news will never tell you about the real economy. The news will never tell you about your real job. Your real job is summed up by Gandhi, who said, "Find someone who needs help and help them." And the real economy is the subjective mood state of every single person on the planet. It's infuriatingly simple, and if you wrench your optic nerves away from the vile, howling death vortex embodied in the angry mewlings of doom prophets like Nancy Grace and Bill O'Reilly, and place your peepers on the people nearest to you who probably need a good back rub, blowjob, or loan, you will find that your meat space immediately brightens and weird synchronicities suddenly start springing up all around you. It's the greatest. There's nothing better than it. It's what Terrence McKenna calls novelty. The emergence of something brand new and unexpected into your life. The opening of a portal into some futuristic singularity that's blasting back tachyon particles that manifest in the form of coincidence, heightened awareness, and love in your subjective life. Planet Earth is a matter assimilator. A matter assimilator of which the phenomena it generates is a product of the combined attention of all the people on the planet. That means if we spend our time staring into the sweaty cleavage of Murdoch stripper news sirens or listening to the yapping of vampire pundits, then our collective attention will result in this planet generating war after war until Mad Max will seem like the Garden of Eden. These sons of bitches are trying to hold up a terrible narrative in front of as many people as possible to make us scared and angry and hopeless. Ultimately, it just results in you going to the mall and feeling like everybody hates everybody else. Well, it's because we're all paranoid. The news is a form of information cocaine. It gives you a little burst, a kind of strange up. A kind of weird, speedy, subjective amphetamine high as you watch the bombs going off. But it also results in a crash where we fall into a kind of dark, shadowy valley of hopelessness. Because it's grabbed our attention. In the same way when you shine a laser pointer in front of the cat, that's what the news does to us with death, destruction, bombs, and horror. It does that to all of humanity, and our collective minds end up moldering and rotting, and the end product is more war, more death, more violence. So you got to turn off the news, if you can. It's hard. I can't do it a lot of the times. I talk about it a lot. I like talking about it. It's fun to talk about the weird darkness. It's a confusing, tricky thing. But the best thing to do is just get out there and give hand jobs to the poor. Feed some syrup to hungry grandmas and turn away from the oozing teats of Satan that are poisoning the world with a narrative that ends in the white light of a nuclear apocalypse instead of a technologically enhanced Dionysian planetary orgy. So ice down those balls, friends. Powder your balls and go out into the world and put a blanket on an old person. French kiss a nun. Rub tits with your friends. Go to a swimming pool and save a kid. Do whatever it takes. But just don't let the horrific subjective universe of Nancy Grace and her vampiric ilk poison your mood state and transform your pineal gland into the withered old scrotum of a gonorrheal sailor ejaculating negative thought patterns into the depths of your brain. The Duncan Trussell Family Hour is brought to you by Sure Design T-Shirts. I'm sure many of you are aware of the fact that Steve Jobs on his deathbed uttered his last words were, "Wow, wow, 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 hyperdimensional singularity moment of witnessing all things at once. But really what happened is somebody walked into the room just as he was dying wearing a Sure Design t-shirt, and he had a natural response. If you go around wearing a Sure Design t-shirt, you'll hear that everywhere you go. Wow, wow, wow. It's incredible. The material is so very soft, softer than the vulva of the White Witch of Avalon. These shirts are so very soft that people in mortuaries will not place them on corpses because the corpses momentarily come back to life and are very confused and then die again. It's just cruel to do it. But wearing these shirts will wake up a part of yourself that you thought was long gone, and the inside of you will glow like the sun of Africa over the Saharan dune, and contradictory aspects of your personality will begin to make sweet love in the hot, steamy shower of your soul. So go to SureDesignT-Shirts.com and put in my name and you get 10% off. Sure Design T-Shirts. We are also sponsored by Audible.com. Audible has one of the largest collections of audiobooks since the Electronic Library of Alexandria. These are narrated by some very talented voice actors like Frank Mueller, who is no longer with us, but before he split into infinity, he recorded some amazing audiobooks. So if you go to audibletrial.com/family hour, you will get a free audiobook if you sign up for a trial membership. That means you can cancel it and you still get to keep the Audible book, but you won't want to cancel it because it would be very similar to closing a portal into pure, awesome entertainment, which will keep you locked to the treadmill, much like Julian Assange will soon be locked to the legs of a rabid pit bull in the basement of a Pentagon prison. Go to audibletrial.com/family hour. Sign up for a trial membership. The Duncan Trussell Family Hour will get $15, so it's a way that you can contribute to the podcast and get something back. More than just the podcast. So go do that. And if you want to directly support the podcast, go to DuncanTrussell.com and donate some of your green energy to us or buy one of our awesome t-shirts. which come from these sweet darlings at Sure Design T-shirts, which means they're very soft and will soothe your poor, chafed, heat-blistered skin. So do that. Support the podcast. And you can also support the podcast just by joining the forum and engaging in the awesome conversations that are happening there. And people have meetups too, so it's a great way if you feel lonely and want to contact someone in meet space. This stuff's happening all over the planet. There's people in Japan who are arranging meetings. It's everywhere. So go there if you're feeling like you're too isolated, because isolation will not fix your depression any more than throwing gasoline onto a blaze will stop a fire. Unfortunately, you gotta hang out in meat space with other meat bodies. I don't know why it works, but it fucking works. So go do that. Join the forum, donate, Audible, buy a Sure Design t-shirt, buy a t-shirt, buy a poster, buy some stickers. But if you don't want to do any of that, that's fine too. Just enjoy the podcast. And if you have some time, leave a positive comment about it on iTunes. But you don't even have to do that. Just enjoy the podcast. And if you don't enjoy the podcast, well, fuck you. Hope a crocodile ends up climbing into your asshole and chewing your heart out. But still, go out there this week and do some sweet thing for a lonely darling out there who needs a hug, a blanket, some tea, a sandwich, alone, foot job, hand job, shoulder rub, ear lick, a nice loving gaze, or a cup of coffee. Just go do something good. You'll get some amazing results for it. It always bounces back. There is such a thing as selfish altruism, and it totally works. The universe does not care if you're doing good acts so that you can receive good karma. It doesn't work like that. You can be a selfish altruist. It's so much better than being a selfish cunt. Okay, I love you guys. Today's podcast is an interview with one of my favorite comedians, Brody Stevens. He's got his own show on HBO Go called Enjoy It. He's been in The Hangover, Hangover 2, Due Date. And he's one of those comedians where when he goes on stage, other comedians come from and watch him in the back of the room, because he's so incredibly unique and funny and such a powerful force on stage that you learn a lot from watching him do stand-up, and he makes you laugh really, really hard. So everyone, please send out your psychic tendrils, your chakras, open your pineal gland, spray some psychic jizz in the direction of my dear friend, comedian Brody Stevens. I accidentally deleted the first 5 minutes of this thing. Sorry, you guys, if it seems a little off.
Like I said, I don't mind the radiation machine, but the chat down was something that I've never had before. And the guy was just asking tons of questions and going through all my stuff, my carry-on, and it was...
What kind of questions?
Just, what do you do? How was your night? What are you doing here?
How was your night?
Yeah, like, what'd you do last night? You know, did you have a good time? What are you going to... Where, I forget where it was going, but it was just a million questions, and it took 15 minutes.
Right, you can miss your flight.
Yeah, it was a long time. But I just sat there and was just conversating. I didn't cause any problems.
Well, that's what we're all doing. I mean, that's the I remember before, like, September 11th and the increase in security in this country, I can remember thinking about, like, the Holocaust and thinking about, man, I just do not understand how that many Jews allowed themselves to get, like, in the situation of, like, getting on the train. Let's just get you guys on these trains now, and let's get you. And I know that there were guns involved and stuff, but there were so many of them, you know, at least in the movies when you see it, when they're getting, like, marched into the fucking camps and stuff, there's always this sense where, like, man, just rise up, fight, and they don't. And I would think, man, why didn't they put up more of a fight? And then you go to the fucking TSA lines, and there's your answer, because it happens slowly. You know, people just sort of allow themselves to get lulled into this complacency. And then the next thing you know, who knows what could be next?
I mean, what is next?
I don't know.
We're already taking off our shoes.
Well,
taking off our belt.
It's adrenal scans. It's using lasers to scan adrenaline levels, and then it'll be some kind of rudimentary technologically enhanced telepathy where they can read what your thought patterns are a little bit. And then it'll be, this thing with Trapwire. You know about that?
Uh-uh.
So Trapwire is this thing WikiLeaks just dumped this information about some apparent grid of security cameras all over the United States that are using facial recognition technology on anyone who's in public. And if you, they like have algorithms to detect what odd behavior is. So I imagine if you're in a public place and suddenly you stop moving or you're taking pictures of weird things, it'll like zoom in, take a picture of your face, do facial scanning on it to identify who you are. I think it might even cross-reference your fucking Facebook page, but it'll figure out who you are and then create a little file on you. So now anytime that you like trigger that thing again, it's like, okay, now they're taking pictures here. Now they're taking pictures there. And it's just a Orwellian kind of security state thing.
But if you know you're not up to bad activities, if you're just living your life, you're a good guy, you're not a terrorist, you're not smuggling drugs more than what you know for personal consumption, shouldn't you be okay with that? Like you just go with it? Or no, is that you got to fight even for
the
idea behind that?
Isn't that the great mystery, man? That's like the great question, which is, there's one side. I have two things that live inside of me, or a lot of different parts of me. One side is like a deep basement level conspiracy theorist who is like convinced that we are on the verge of some kind of shift in our society that leads in the direction of a lot of our liberties being stripped away.
Uh-huh.
And the other side is a more realistic being that's like, there are fucking guys right now in the government. There are people in the FBI and the CIA who hear these types of conversations when some bearded freak is like, "You're taking our liberties away, man." And they're like, "No, no, no, you don't get it. There are people who are really want to bring a suitcase nuke over here and wipe out 100,000 people, hippie. I don't fucking care about your goddamn mushroom consumption. Eat as many mushrooms as you want. Go sit in the spa and make out with hippie chicks while you're on mushrooms. Do it. We don't fucking care. We're worried about a 100 different enemies."
Yeah. That's good when you think that way.
There's two sides.
That's a good side.
You think that's what it is?
Yeah, they're trying to protect us from a suitcase bomb, or protect us from, you know, they've been, I mean, since 9/11, it's been pretty good, right? In terms of any craziness.
Well, no, but here's where it gets weird.
But we still have guns and all that stuff.
Well, the guns are fine. Here's where it gets, this is the problem. The problem is, whenever there's a war, there's a great deal of profit that comes in the direction of a few small number of people. Like, they make a lot of money. War is a very profitable endeavor. Even if it costs the country money and the taxpayers money, it basically is a way to reallocate funds from taxpayers to private individuals who sell weapons and all the variety of things that you need for the war machine to work.
So, Halliburton,
Raytheon, all the different weird companies and those people who, and the shareholders and the people who run those companies, whenever there's a war, their bank accounts fill up. And so they like it. They like a war. In the same way that the people who run private prisons, they make money every time a new prisoner comes in there. They need to keep those things stocked with as many prisoners as possible. It's in their interest to keep people in prison. Or the pharmaceutical companies, it's in the interest of the pharmaceutical companies for people to get sick. So you end up where, instead of having a society where people don't want people in prison, don't want people sick, and don't want war to break out, you end up in a society where people need people sick, need people in prison, and need regular wars, or they lose their beautiful mansions and their beautiful cars, or they experience a loss of the quality of life that they're having, which is equivalent to that of Greek gods. So they're not really into the idea of peace, health, or a crimeless society. So when you know that there's people who benefit from the negativity and it's in a quantifiable way, then suddenly the idea that, yeah, they're protecting us, that idea becomes a little questionable.
But aren't people going to get sick anyway, and there's criminals anyway? You don't have to root for that stuff. It's going to happen. People get older. People get...
Well, you have in prisons something like, I don't know the statistic now, but it's some horrifying statistic, which is like 60% of the people in prisons are nonviolent drug offenders. Maybe it's 40%, but it's somewhere around half of the people in prison are nonviolent drug offenders. So that law, the drug laws, that's not a real law. Like, that's not really protecting anybody, the drug laws. Marijuana, like arresting someone for marijuana, you're not protecting anyone.
Are there still people going to prison for marijuana?
Sure. All the time. Yeah, it depends on what state you're living in, but definitely they bust people for marijuana. But let's say it's something a little more hard. Let's say it's LSD.
Okay.
There's people who go to prison for LSD. There's people who go to prison for ecstasy, for cocaine. There's people who go to prison for heroin. Prison is not the right place for someone with a drug addiction. If someone's got a drug addiction, you need to put them in
a rehab facility.
Yeah. And so, there's still going to be asshole criminals who, you know, are tossing babies on barbecue pits and they need to be in jail.
But yes,
of course, no question. But that's 40 or 50% of the people who are currently in prisons right now. Most of the people in prisons are black dudes who are selling cocaine.
That's a lot of it.
Yeah. I mean, why, what the fuck? Why are we doing? There's more people in prison. There are more black people in prison now than there are slaves. So than there were slaves. And so, you know, people are making money off of it. That's where it gets weird. Where it gets weird is it's not just like, yeah, we got to lock these guys up because they're a menace to society. It's like, we need to lock these guys up to keep fucking meet our quota.
Well, there's people in there for murder also and violent crimes, aren't there?
They need to be there.
Yeah.
Prisons are a necessary part of living in a primate hive because some people freak out and do stupid shit and they need to be restrained. But most of the people in there just wanted to get high. They don't need to be in jail.
No.
And then the wars that are happening, like the war in Afghanistan right now, most people don't even know why we're there.
Why are we there?
Don't ask me. I've asked troops. I've asked soldiers who've come to my shows, why are we in Afghanistan? And they're like, I don't know. Osama bin Laden's dead.
Yep.
Al-Qaeda's fucked up. But we're still there.
Are we there to maintain the peace? Or are we there to help a democracy? Are we there to... It's probably money, right?
Yeah. It's because the people who... Because, like, someone told me about if you, like, get the contract to run a laundry facility because they have to wash, of course, wash everyone's clothes at war.
Yeah.
If you get that contract to run the laundry facility, you're making millions and millions and millions of dollars from that. Like, you're just going to make so much money off of just running a laundromat in Afghanistan. Is an extremely profitable endeavor. So there's a lot of different people who have these jobs out there like that. Laundromats. I believe that in Iraq, I don't know about Afghanistan, but there's fucking a McDonald's out there.
There's a McDonald's in Afghanistan?
There was in Iraq. I saw pictures in the soldiers' compounds. I think so, yeah. There's like corporations. There's a web of corporations that all kind of get together when there's a war and they dispense... You know, the people who make the flashlights, the people who make the mattresses, the people who make the pillows, people who make whatever the fuck anyone out there is using, people who transport the stuff. They make so much money.
Right.
It's like for some people, a war is like as exciting and awesome as for us booking a movie is.
Really?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're like, oh, fuck yeah, it's a fucking war. Oh, shit. Israel's about to attack Iran. Oh, shit. Are they going to do it? They're going to do it. I think they're going to do it. They're going to do it. And then we're going to come in there. Oh, man. Oh, thank you, God. Thank you, God. That's people think like that because they know the moment that shit happens and we have to start moving troops out there, their bank accounts just explode. So that's the big problem.
Money.
Well, it's because people are profiting off of death.
Yeah.
So that's where we run into and then the pharmaceutical companies, it's like, you know, there's this famous, there's a famous video on YouTube of some poor guy with MS or I don't know, some neurological disease who has to smoke marijuana. Have you seen this?
No, I have not.
So he says to Romney, you know, what about me, Romney? I've got to like, I use this stuff medicinally. And Romney's like, well, I believe that there are synthetic versions of marijuana that you could purchase.
Synthetic?
Yeah, Marinol. So Romney, you know, the pharmaceutical Romney represents the pharmaceutical companies. And so their stance is, no, let us synthesize a natural substance for you, and then you have to buy it from us instead of being able to grow it out of the ground. And so the pharmaceutical companies, it's in the interest of the pharmaceutical companies for marijuana to be illegal. Like, for example, if there were Vicodin pills and you could grow Vicodin,
yeah,
that would be illegal. Like, Vicodin plants would be illegal because they want to be able to set, they want to be in control of the distribution of it so they can make money from the distribution of it.
So isn't that going to happen if they legalize marijuana?
What's that?
Don't they want to legalize marijuana? When people say, like, let's say the state of California, you go, let's legalize marijuana and let the government oversee it and let them tax it. And is that something different? I mean,
No, I think they do. There are factions who want to legalize marijuana, but then there's lobbyists who want to keep it illegal because the people they represent make money off of it being illegal. So you end up in this awful situation. Even some people want marijuana to be legal, not because they believe people have the right to get into whatever mind state they want to get into, because they know they'll make money from it being legal. So you have on both sides, no one's thinking this should be legal because it's a human's natural right to create any state of consciousness that they want through substances.
Mm-hmm.
They're thinking, we'll make a fuckload of money. Or we make more if it's illegal. And so decisions are being made off of personal profit instead of humanism or the idea of what is the right thing to do. You know?
I can't believe how much money people are making. And you know what? A lot of the money they make, it just sits in the bank. They don't even spend it.
I know.
Like these athletes making so much money.
Yeah, it just sits there. I mean, it's really a stunning thing when you consider the fact that they're basically, here's where it gets really fucking weird, dude. Athletes making a shitload of money, I kind of like that. There's something cool about creating a reward system that makes people turn into aliens, you know, that turn into superheroes. I kind of fucking love that. But like, with war and prison, it's really weird when you consider that the money that they're making is literally from converting life energy into death.
Yeah.
And then it's really strange when you think by converting life energy into death, you then that turns it into money. And money is just numbers. So you're basically converting living energy into electronic numbers in someone's bank account. It's like you're assimilating a person. You blow a person to smithereens with your badass drone.
Yeah.
You get a certain amount of money for the missiles that got fired out of the drone. You get to get a certain amount of money for the drone. And by killing that person, you've almost sucked their soul into a bank where that person, there's actually a quantifiable number based on how much it costs to like blow the person up, how much it costs if you're going to go and like tag the body and mark down the death and keep track of it. The statisticians who have to keep track of that, the soldiers, the amount they got paid for the couple of hours they spent flying the drone to blow the person up, that all equals a number. You could almost calculate, oh yeah, that Afghani soldier, the kid we accidentally killed actually made someone $38,000. And that goes in someone's bank account. And so the bank accounts of these military, the bank accounts of the warmongers are actually filled with human souls that have been extracted from the corpses that they blew up with their war machines. It's fucking eerie. It's like out of a sci-fi movie.
Would you say most of the people they're killing, not saying deserve to be killed, but are, I mean, they make mistakes. I know they've killed kids and innocent bystanders.
The way we got to look at it is if all of a sudden let's imagine that here in the United States, some fucking, but way in the backwoods, a team of hardcore fundamentalist Christian rednecks decided they got a fucking, they got pissed off at Saudi Arabia because they decided that Saudi Arabia is actually they control all the oil and those are the people behind everything, that are truly behind everything. And so these fundamentalist Christians, they actually manage to hijack a plane in Saudi Arabia and fucking fly that plane into some buildings in Saudi Arabia and kill thousands of people.
Yeah.
And then so Saudi Arabia, let's imagine they had the largest military in the world, and they're like, hey, sorry, United States, you're not taking care of this shit. We're going to take care of it. They fly into the United States. They put bases all over the United States, and they begin patrolling our neighborhoods so that when you go outside, you see Saudi Arabian soldiers walking up and down the street with guns. Or like when you're driving, a Saudi Arabian soldier will get in front of your car and be like, stop, stop, stop. And if you're a little too drunk or you're confused or you look the wrong way, they just start shooting you.
But that's not going to happen here.
No, no, no. But imagine if it did.
Right.
So if it did, and you know, you get a phone call one day that's like, hey, what's up, man? I got really bad fucking news, dude. Galifianakis, he was running a red light at a stop and he wasn't paying attention and they killed him.
Well, I don't want to think that.
Yeah, but that's people in Afghanistan. That's what happens, man. People in Afghanistan, they get calls like that all the day, which is like, hey, I'm sorry, your uncle got blown up by a drone strike. So then what ends up happening is you're like, well, fuck that. I'm going to fight these fucking cocksuckers. I'm going to start taking shots at them if I can. If I get a chance and I see one walking down the street alone, I'm going to blow his fucking head off if I can.
Yeah.
And then the next thing you know, you have what's happening in Afghanistan, which is like, are those people right? Or I don't know if they're right. A lot of them are throwing acid in women's faces and making them wear beekeeper outfits.
I mean, yeah, let's be honest. That is a little backwards, right?
Yeah, but it's not our position to rectify that.
No, it's not. Let them be.
Yeah, let them be. Don't stick your fucking branches in the ant's nest. And then you do that, and the next thing you know, another fucking attack happens because you've pissed these fucking people off, and somehow they manage to, like, get over here and blow up a school bus or set fire to a building or do some crazy thing because they're so angry they want revenge, and then they get their revenge. And then we're like, no, fuck you, and then the cycle starts again because we go back and attack them, and now we have this endless cycle of war that is just filling rich people's bank accounts up like an air mattress filled with blood. And it's like that's where the problem is. Dude,
I sleep on an air mattress. I don't think it's full of blood.
Do you really?
It's full of air. It's not that uncomfortable.
Speaking of full of air, I've been too full of air in this, man. I didn't want to go off on this tangent. I want to talk to you about
Well, we went right into the heavy stuff.
Yeah, I wanted to...
Political, heavy. You've been watching a lot of CNN and Fox.
I know. I was on the road and I watched too much news. That's what happened. I don't mean to get negative, but holy fucking shit, man. You've got this HBO show...
Thank you.
...that's happening that is getting rave reviews from everywhere. It's on HBO Go. It's like a digital show.
It's the digital arm of HBO, HBO Go. If you have HBO, you can access it. If you don't have HBO, you've got to get a code. You can't watch it, basically, legally, without having HBO. I mean, you can watch it at a friend's house who has HBO.
Can you tell me about the show, what it's about? I've actually only been able to watch the previews, which are amazing looking because I don't have HBO yet, which is part of the compulsion. I just bought a TV, and part of the compulsion of buying that TV was like not being able to watch your fucking show because it's like, this is the last straw, man. I can't watch Brody's show, so I'm now truly missing out on TV. But yeah, tell me about the show. What is it?
The show is basically about me. It's a 6 15-minute episodes, and it originally was about me going to the next level, me being a warm-up. Zach Galifianakis produced it, and he thought, like, okay, Brody, you're a funny guy. I want to produce a show for you and let the world, or let America, see what I see. And part of it was me getting out of warm-up and going to the next level, reconciling with my sister, just little stories, like all these little things I talked about, my relationship with my sister, my relationship with my mom, my relationship with baseball, my relationship with my past. All that stuff was going to be implemented into this show. I didn't know exactly how, but I knew we were going to do the pilot. And the pilot was my sister and I reconciling for my mom's 80th birthday. So you get to see me doing some comedy. You get to see me interact with my sister. You get to see me interact with my mom. And it's silly and it's a little goofy, but it's also real and has a heart. So that was the pilot. And they liked it. HBO liked the pilot. and we were going to go we were going to go shoot more shows. And then I went to Montreal last year, and I went to Ireland, and I had a little episode, a little manic episode. I stopped taking my meds. I got sick. I got off my meds, and I had a episode that lasted about a week of me being combative, out of character, and kind of off the rails. And I ended up going to the hospital. My friends got together, and they felt like it would be best for me to take a break. And I was exhibiting not behavior that was just not me. And it was because I got off the meds cold turkey. You're not supposed to stop any kind of medication cold turkey. And I stopped cold turkey. I was sick. I was, I think, a little exhausted from the travel. And then I was on this antibiotic, and it made me feel better. And then once it made me feel better, I felt like, wow, I just did it 2 days without my meds, and I feel great. And I'm on this antibiotic, and I'm not feeling sick anymore, and my shows were good. And I just kept spiraling upward. I wasn't depressed. I was like, wow, I'm happy. And I wasn't being, you know, I started getting a little combative. Like, if somebody wasn't on the same wavelength with me, I would get, like, upset with them. Like, I'd be positive, and they go, Brody, well, you're not being positive. Well, really? I've got to deal with HBO. I just hosted TMZ. I went to Ireland. I went to Montreal. I was feeling great. I was exercising. So then that would, if they weren't with me, I would, like, turn on them.
Right.
And that wasn't good. So bottom line is they put me in the, I went to UCLA, and I was there for a couple weeks, and they put me on different medication, and I mellowed out. And then at that point, I felt like, and HBO the whole time was very understanding. They stayed with me. They said, take as much time as you want. And I felt like, you know, once I got out of the hospital and I started getting my life back together, I said, why don't we just make this part of the show? It was real,
yeah.
You know, about me going to the hospital, getting out of the hospital, and then continue with the reconciliation. I worked at Chelsea lately. I had a couple little problems there. So I wanted to reconcile with Chelsea and the staff at Chelsea lately. And then I wanted to get back on TV and do stand-up, prove
right.
that I can go from being in the hospital, not being myself, and then getting back with Chelsea, getting back on that show, and then getting back on TV, and then also with it, doing stand-up on TV, and then within it, doing little sketches, little stuff with my sister, doing stuff with baseball, doing stuff with an acting class, doing stuff with an improv class, basically just being me. And then doing stand-up. So all that was like working towards getting back on Conan. All that was working towards getting back on Chelsea. All that was working towards getting back with my sister. So all my stand-up, I would hit these notes that would tie in to the episodes.
So it's like what happened to you was very similar to what happens when they send a rocket into space. Like, when you send a rocket into space, it's got to go through the upper atmosphere of Earth, and it burns the fuck up for a little while it's getting out of the gravity of space. It's a transitory period is what you went through, a transitory period between you being Brody, the comedian who was doing warm-up for a very long time.
9 years.
9 years. Brilliant on fucking stage, loved by all the comedians. Everyone fucking loves you. You're the comic who gets on stage and people come and watch, and they want to watch every time because it's always different.
Yeah.
And it's completely original. And so it's like inspiring for a lot of comics because they see you courageously, fully being yourself on stage, not doing some plasticky bullshit, not doing the repetitive loop of old material, but you're like purely in the moment. And sometimes it's sometimes it works. Maybe sometimes it doesn't work.
Sometimes it doesn't. It depends on where you're at.
It doesn't matter because you've made the decision to go for it, and that's what inspires people. So that had been going on for a long time for you, and then you started like hitting these little like bumps where you got on The Hangover.
Yeah.
Right? That was the first big thing, right?
Yeah.
The Hangover. And then after that, you started getting in another...
I got Due Date.
Due Date. And then after that, what happened after that?
Hangover 2.
So you start booking movies. Now you're getting this kind of acceleration. Like all of a sudden, the pot's beginning to boil.
Yeah.
And then You go into HBO, you pitch a fucking show with Galifianakis, HBO recognizes how funny you are
right
away. So you're getting...
I pitched to HBO, I pitched to Comedy Central, I pitched to Adult Swim, and I handled all the meetings. I was doing all that, and I was on... This is before my episode, you know, before I was on my meds, my basic therapeutic level meds that people take, 20 milligrams of Lexapro, which is the lowest dose. A lot of comedians take it.
Oh, yeah.
I wish I didn't. I mean, I tried to, you know, maybe eventually I'll wean back down.
Why do you wish you didn't?
Because there's side effects, going to the bathroom all the time. You can't drink alcohol that much. You can't be, I mean, you got to have your meds with you. It's not like just complete natural living. You've got to have these... synthetic, you got to go get them refilled.
Man, this is another area where there's two parts of my mind that think about this. And like one part is, man, I don't want the fucking fish hooks of a pharmaceutical company stuck in my brain. I don't want to be attached to Pfizer to feel good. That's one side of my brain.
Mm-hmm.
The other side of my brain, you know, I just had a conversation with a friend of mine who just got on antidepressants.
Yeah.
And she's been depressed for a long fucking time. Just not happy, not having a good go of it, not having a good time out in the world, you know? And she says she wished she could go back and take them 10 years ago. Like, it's gone, the endless rumination, the self-hate, waking up feeling like shit, it's all gone.
Right.
Fixed. It's gone, you know? And it worked. You know what I mean? It worked. It's like, so what's wrong with that? Like, what's wrong with that? That to me, it seems like if you've tried the other stuff and it didn't work, there's no need for you to suffer in this life. It's like we use fucking light, you know.
Air conditioning, light,
we use
electricity.
So many things that connect us, you know, to big companies to have, like, comfort.
Cell phones.
So, yeah, I don't know, man. I think it really is a personal choice that you shouldn't feel guilty about.
Well, I originally took meds because I was obsessive. I never got really depressed. I would get depressed because I got sick of being hard on myself. It's like, gosh, why am I so hard on myself? Why am I so... Think people would say stuff to me and would stick to me. And this is before I really started doing comedy. So I was in Seattle, and I took Luvox, which was for OCD, basically to stop, like, obsessing about things that don't matter. And I took that for about a year or so, and it seemed to work up there. Then when I moved to New York, I couldn't take it. The different states, you're not, you know, to transfer it over. And I didn't take an antidepressant in New York. I talked to a psychologist, but overall I felt pretty good. I didn't have many obsessive or depressive times, and I wasn't on meds. And then I remember, like, my third year in New York, it just started getting hot again, and I felt like I just got to get out of here. I'm ready to come back to L.A. And I'm not saying I had an episode, but I just needed a break. And I went and visited my mom in Colorado and my stepfather, and I decided, like, I need to I'm gonna come back to LA. I wanted to come back when I was 30.
How often have you had these episodes throughout your life?
Just a couple times, maybe, where, I mean, when my mind is not relaxed. You know, that was just from running out of money, being stressed. You know, I don't handle, maybe the way I handle stress, I need to be tougher, and I don't handle it well. And it's hard sometimes when you don't have a wife, or you don't have a girlfriend,
right,
or you don't have a kid. But sometimes that makes it harder also. That's extra stress.
I don't know, man. I think that, like, I don't, maybe the grass is always greener. I don't know. But, like, there's some specific kind of, like, when you're by yourself, like, when you're alone, even if you have friends to call, it's not the same as having a girlfriend. You know, like, when you come home to, like, the empty place or whatever, I don't know that anyone really understands what that can be like how eerie those moments can be. Or when you get sick by yourself, you know, when you get really sick and no one's around, that's like a strange existential vacuum happens.
I haven't had that. I haven't been sick for a couple of years, and I think about that. Oh, if I got sick, what would, you know, cold or whatever. I just got to, yeah, it's hard being a 42-year-old bachelor.
Yeah.
But you know, people deal with it. You can do it. It can be done. You just got to go out and do stuff during the day. You got a podcast. You want to do some comedy. You want to talk to your family. You know, I'm getting closer with my sister, my aunts and uncles. I'm trying to do that. But it's not easy. And I do feel good about this HBO show. I feel good about where that's going. And that, I mean, it could just all be about work, too. I was on a regular work schedule for 9 years.
Yeah.
And you had that going. I was able to get that rhythm. Now, on my own, you know, my own business model, and you got to create that momentum on your own.
This thing that happened with you and HBO, to me, is one of the signs that the pendulum is swinging in the right direction. And also, HBO is badass. Like, their shows are incredible, man. But,
yeah.
But, so that's another part of it. But, man, it's like, I think all of us comedians, you know, comedians can be some of the most vicious cunts of all time.
Oh, yeah.
The most vicious, backstabbing, brutal, gossipy, jealous, bitter cunts that have ever, ever existed. But I'll tell you, so comedians will start getting some success, right? And you know, in the background titter is always negative about those comedians. Like, oh, man, really? That's fucking happening? Really? They'll find reasons that the comedian's flawed or bad or, you know, oh, that's just a network or, oh, that's just a hologram. That's not a real comic.
Right.
Oh, all this stuff. I'm guilty of it. I'm guilty of these kinds of things. I've fallen into that pit.
Yeah.
But you, nobody's doing that. Nobody's doing that, Brody. Everybody's like, this is exactly what's supposed to fucking happen. Like, this is right. Because you're a brilliant comedian. You're an original voice. You're not some kind of like, you're not doing the same thing that everyone else is doing. You're like doing what you're doing is its own thing and hilarious. And it's a beautiful, beautiful thing to watch, man. Like, everyone's just overjoyed by it. I bought a fucking TV, dude. I bought a TV so I can watch your show.
Yeah, I'm helping out the economy.
You're helping the economy. So what happens now? Are they going to put, is there any talk about it moving forward to a show?
I mean, if you were to ask me, I hope I could do a season two and just keep doing what I did with season one. I mean, it was a lot of work in terms of the editors and the directors and getting things done. I mean, I was me on it. I was me. I let them point me in the right direction. I created the, you know, the outline, and I gave the material. And then from there, I let the director kind of put his vision into it,
right,
and the editor, and then also let the writers put their two cents in. And it was a definite collaborative effort. It wasn't just, I'm not like Louis C.K. where I do everything. I do the directing, I do the editing, I do this, I do that. I can't. I'm not that kind of guy. I'm more of like, okay, Brody, do this, do what you do, but do it and do it this way.
Right.
In this direction. Okay, I'll do it. Boom. And I would do it. How was that? Good. Perfect.
Who's the director?
Dean Fleischer Camp. Dean Camp Fleischer. I always forget his last name. But Dean. He's married to Jenny Slate. They're getting married. Very talented. Great guy. I took the direction from him. Zach was there occasionally. Mike Gibbons produced it. He's a great producer, and he got set up a lot of stuff. I mean, it was definitely a professional setup.
No, it looks great. Holy shit, man. The fucking 4-minute, 2-minute clips that they show. They sure aren't letting any bit of that thing out, are they? Like, the previews are like 20 fucking seconds.
Where are you seeing the previews?
Online. I've Google searched it.
Yeah.
They're tiny. They're barely letting any gas out of that can.
But I'm getting tons of positive feedback. This is like by far, far and away the most positive feedback I've ever had on anything. You know, it dwarfs when I did Conan. It dwarfs.
Well, yeah.
anything.
Well, because, see, this is the thing, man. This is why podcasts are cool. This is why it's like this is why I feel like this represents part of this new era that's happening of comedy, which is it's this like a chance to really show the depth of who a comedian is. You know, it's this kind of personal. It's very personal. It's like, you know, I just saw Robert Pattinson on the Jon Stewart show.
Right.
And it's this famous clip that went a little viral where Jon Stewart brought out ice cream on The Daily Show to eat with Robert Pattinson because Kristen Stewart just broke up with him or cheated on him or whatever.
Right. Uh-huh.
It's cool. It's funny, I guess. But Robert Pattinson said to me, one of the most disturbing, creepy fucking things I've ever seen, which is he starts stammering and then he says, you know, this is unscripted and this is why I feel like I need a publicist to tell me what to say. And it was like, what the fuck?
He doesn't know how to like
you can't
be himself.
Talk. You can't talk. You literally can't fucking talk. You can't talk about your breakup because you're afraid of like the political implications of saying anything because you're terrified of being yourself. Because he's an actor. He's a clothes hanger for good writing. And he's just like he's like a fancy clothes hanger at the Four Seasons that you hang like a nice fucking jizz-stained bathrobe on. And the moment the guy has to talk, he can't fucking talk. It's like, no personality. Where's the personality? What are you?
He's a great actor.
He's a great fucking actor. But come on, man. You could talk. You could talk without worry. You just be yourself. So that to me is part of this. What I'm hopeful is this swing in the direction of like the focus going off of symmetry and going on to personality.
Yeah.
You know,
that personality.
Yeah. Like personality, like going to like to the people want to see like the people are sick of seeing these plasticky, synthetic, symmetrical zombies go plodding across our HDTVs with their goddamn
everything's perfect,
the lighting's perfect, the makeup's perfect. We don't want to see that anymore. I want to see more like I want to see more goddamn Danny fucking McBride, you know. I want to see more goddamn heart, more soul, where we,
yeah,
you know, the
more Brody,
more fucking Brody, yeah,
that kind of stuff. And I can do that. I mean, I've done it. I was on Tosh, I was on Chelsea Lately, I'm going to be on the Nick Kroll show. I was on Comedy Bang Bang, and I'm just being myself. I take direction. I'm good at that. I'm good at being Brody. I'm good at being myself. I'm good at taking direction. I'm good at returning phone calls. I'm good at Twitter. I'm good at talking on a podcast.
Yes.
But a lot of the other stuff I'm not great at, which is...
We got to get you a lady.
Yeah, I'd like to. I mean, I feel like I'm getting more... I think I'm going to meet a girl. I think I'm going to meet somebody in person at a show.
Do you find yourself getting more, like, stuff on Twitter from the ladies or more like...
Got a few more things, but nothing amazing.
That's the next step, man. That's the final missing component in this great machine that you're building here is we got to find you a sweet lass.
Yeah, it will help. I said this on Twitter and people didn't believe it, but I feel like I'm a fixer-upper. I need a girl to come in and help me out, have me move into her house. She's got like a nice condo. I can move in and she can help me out and laundry and cooking and massaging. And it's hard to, you know, like I said, being a bachelor, it's hard. Sometimes you just got to like let it go. I mean, a lot of bachelors don't live perfect, and I'm not going to be hard on myself and feel like I have to be super clean and super this and
describe to me your perfect ideal lover.
Well, a girl that I'm attracted to, there's got to be some attraction. She doesn't have to be hot, but I would like to be with some. I want to sow my oats still. I'm only 42.
You want to have a baby?
Maybe eventually. I'm not ready for one now. I mean, I'm not ready for anything right now. I don't even know if I'm ready for a girlfriend right now.
What is sowing oats? Is that having a baby or is that humping?
That means going out on the road and humping and hooking up with chicks, having those I'm not going to say one night stands.
But you want to go through a sex period.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to go out and have girls come up to me and go, you're funny, and I want to be with you, and let's...
You want post-show mouth-fucking.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's easier to get on the road, isn't it?
Not if you're me. I'm terrible at that. I never do that. I've got no game, brother. I can't do anything. Like, I go to strip clubs. I've cried at strip clubs. I can't fucking do it, man. Like, I can't. I'm it's terrible. Like, you know, if there is the opportunity to hook up with a girl on the road, I end up feeling like irresponsible by doing that. Or I feel like, man, you know, I just don't want to.
Just wear a condom.
No, not wearing a fucking condom. It's not that. It's like, it's such an egotistical thing. But I'm like, oh, I just don't want to lead you on or something. It's really bad. I don't know where it came from, but stuck inside of me is some awful sexual morality.
But isn't it in Europe? It's just more open.
Yeah, they're giving hand jobs in the parks. They're jerking
right
off fucking pigeons out there, man. I can't. I know, but here it's not like that. Here there's this added, like, weight to it, it feels like. Or maybe it's just the weightiness of me. I can't, that old free, you know, free love, man.
Were you ever into that free love?
When I was in my 20s,
yeah,
I was not very discriminating. Like, if a girl liked me, or if I liked a girl, and I recognized in her some form of neurosis or insecurity,
yeah,
then I would actually try to exploit that insecurity so that I could fuck the girl. You know what I mean? Like, in a real terrible way, just out of this sense of, like, it's all about getting laid, bro. That's when I was younger. And by the way, I wasn't, like, I've never been a pussy guy like those guys who are, like, just fucking every moment of their lives, sometimes three times in a night, they're just fucking three different girls.
Yeah.
And I've never been like that. But I did when I was younger. I never considered... I didn't spend as much time as I should have thinking about, oh, you know, that's a human being.
No.
You know what I mean? That's a human who's got, like, who might, maybe doesn't need to be, like.
But maybe they get off on it, too.
I know. See, that's the truth. That's what it's, it's like elevating women to.
Sometimes you need that, like a good, look, I'm safe, you're safe, this is going to be a safe experience, you're going to help me, I'm going to help you, thank you.
Yes.
You know, that's kind of stuff I need to do. I need to go out on the road and do that. I've been out on the road a few times recently, and some of the girls that are into me, I'm not really into them. You
right.
know, it's like some
well,
of the...
that, well, that's, what about that? I mean, maybe that sometimes, don't you sometimes think like, oh, maybe just completely remove my whatever, like, system of standards that you have.
Well, not if they're too big. I mean, I can't be with too big.
Right.
You know, I got to have... I've been with, like, bigger girls before, and it could be depressing. And no knock on them. I'm just not that guy.
Right.
I'd like to be with a skinnier girl.
So you want a skinny lass.
Yeah. Why not? I mean, I see guys with, I mean, I see, you know, these comedians, these bachelor comedians with young girls. You know, Bill Maher's always got girls with
oh
them.
Oh, my God. Bill Maher's got these... He's always got these slithering, just oozing deep, 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 I don't know the word for it, succubi. They're like succubi. They're
yeah.
like he went, it's like he's got a well behind his house, like one of those haunted Amityville horror wells that just leads down to hell, and he lowers a bucket down and pulls up Asians with breast implants and brings them to the UCB. Just dripping with sexuality, like he rides. Think about Bill Maher fucking. That guy goes insane in his mansion. He's like a fucking a pan.
He's like a Hugh Hefner type.
Yeah,
he wants to be Hugh Hefner.
Yeah,
that's what it seems like.
He's got hoofs. I bet if he took his shoes off, he'd have just these polished little black hooves with pentagrams engraved in them. He just clops around his mansion with a hard on, banging Asians.
You think he's happy? Lives in a good life?
I don't know. I think so. I mean, I've run into him and, like, I've had, like, brief conversations with him.
Yeah.
And he's always really cool, but kind of, like, edgy but cool. Like, I think he's himself.
Yeah.
You know what? Being your – this is the thing, man. People – this is something I think about all the time. You know, happiness is a confusing word. You know, like – because we're not always going to be happy. Sometimes we're going to be depressed, and sometimes we're going to be angry, and sometimes we're going to be confused, and sometimes we're going to be egotistical, and sometimes we're going to be all these other things. But it's like, maybe happiness just means when you're being those negative things, you're fully being yourself.
Yeah.
Instead of feeling the anger, feeling the lust, and then getting, then immediately being like, oh my God, what's wrong with me? Just letting those things riding those things, riding them like one of Mars, deep, deep hell minions. It's like, you've got to like, just let it roll through, you know? Maybe that's happiness. So is Bill Maher happy? I don't know, but he seems like he's himself.
Yeah, being yourself. That's the key. I mean, I'm happy about the HBO stuff. I'm happy with the response. I'm happy about the prospects of doing another season. I'm happy about the reaction. I'm happy about that I did something.
And also, another thing that happened to you is that thing that put you in the hospital. You know what that was, man? That was a form of altitude sickness. Because you had this sudden acceleration. It was like your entire career was a slingshot getting pulled back farther and farther and farther and farther. And year after year, the thing just kept getting pulled back and back and back and back until finally something happened and bam!
Boom.
You got rocketed into the stratosphere. And just like when people go into really high altitudes, if you go into high altitudes too fast, you get fucking dizzy. You can actually go nuts up there, you know? You hallucinate, you go crazy. So it's like, you got this fucking altitude sickness for a little while. You had a few weeks of, like, being dizzy with the acceleration that you had.
Yeah.
Now you've gone through it. Now you're like, because you're this new person, man. You're like, you're stable. You seem focused and grounded, and like, it's really cool to see. Like, you're definitely like on the brink of.
Oh, well, thank you, Duncan. But I don't always feel that way. I've been going through, like I said, I've been going through some depression, and I think it's the opposite end of what I was going through before. I was way up. Now I'm way down, but I shouldn't be way down.
No, don't do. See, this is the thing, man.
Don't even mention it.
No, you mention it, but don't
dwell on it.
Don't beat yourself up for it. This is the thing. I was just listening to, Ram Dass, you know who Ram Dass is?
I've heard that you mentioned him before.
He's amazing. He's this like, he's just this incredible human being who's like a teacher. And like, he was talking about this very thing. And he was talking about how we can't, the idea isn't, you can't beat yourself up for these different state, you know, for getting down, getting depressed or getting like low. Because then it just adds to it. Like, it's like if you're depressed,
mm-hmm.
you're depressed. It's happening. You know, Brody's depressed today. That's happening. But if you're depressed and then you add to it, what's wrong with me? I shouldn't feel depressed. This stuff is happening. I shouldn't feel this way. Then you've created this weird structure in your mind, which is like, here's how I should feel. You know?
Well, I'm trying to get back to how I felt before my episode.
You know how they get out of Dante's Inferno? You know about Dante's Inferno, how you get out of hell?
How?
You got to go through the middle of hell. You can't get out of hell by going out. Like, hell's like this funnel that it's basically like a
you got to go back through it.
You got to go through down to the center of hell to get out of hell.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you got to go to the nucleus of the thing, you know? Like, the way I've always, like, with depression, when I get depressed, I've found there's like one basic thing I have to do before I start addressing it in like common sense ways is I have to not run away from it and not pretend that I'm not depressed. Like, that's the first thing, is to be like, okay, you're depressed.
Right.
And not hide it from people. And you don't do that, but there have been times when I've tried to hide it and just pretend to be happy. But I'll just tell people if I'm depressed, I'm like, yeah, I'm really fucking depressed right now. I feel lonely and I feel depressed and bad. And
see, I don't feel lonely because I have a great support system, and I've been having great feedback recently. And I know this HBO thing, it's going to be there forever. It's like a movie. It's like I did.
It'll just snowball too. It'll just grow and grow. More and more people will. It'll gain more of a following every day.
Yeah, and that makes me feel good. But I'm like, I'm not saying I feel like I'm losing my mind, but just things that I would normally do before, I'm not doing now.
Like what?
don't know, just like shaving and taking care of myself like I used to.
See, this is the second thing that I figured out about depression, man, which is that it's like you can't make your decisions of the action that you take based on the way you feel. So the other thing that I'll try to do when I get really fucking depressed, even though it's like walking on a planet where the gravity is 10 times more than on Earth,
mm-hmm.
I make myself do the things that my body doesn't want me to do.
Like exercise.
Yes.
Yeah.
Force myself into the gym, fucking like, you know, go, you know, take like, if even though it seems weird, man, take like 3 showers a day, you know, like really like keep really clean. Try to keep your place clean. Try to keep your, you know, like weird shit that you just don't feel like doing. Wash your car more than you normally would. Keep your car clean. Like take care of the exterior stuff, even though you don't feel like it.
Opposite action.
Opposite action. Vitamins too. Take like in eating really well. And then somewhere in that, those opposite actions, all of a sudden I'll lift up out of the fucking blues and stay there for a little while.
Yeah, I've cut out vitamins. I haven't been doing vitamins or eating like I used to. And I think it just could be like my apartment. I don't like my apartment where I live. And I kind of feel like I want to go back to the valley, get a new place.
Yeah, well, are you keeping your apartment clean?
It's clean, but it's not, it's more like a dorm.
Right.
You know, I've got, it's livable, but it's not homely.
Right.
It's not homey.
Right. That's so important, isn't it? It's the most important thing to like get the inside of your shell nice and decorated and comfortable, because you're coming home to a thing that doesn't feel like you live there, you know?
And that's what I go through. That's why I try to stay out, you know, stay out at night.
Well, there's a problem for you to address. You can get your place fixed.
I've been trying to get my place fixed.
All right, I'm sending out a call right now. I'm sending out a call. You're listening to this right now. I don't know who you are, but you know who you are because you can feel the connection right now.
Yes.
With my sweet friend Brody Stevens here.
Stephen Brody Stevens.
Listen to me, my sweet madam, my lovely, thinnish, healthy, beautiful woman out there who gives great massages. This man that you're listening to is your lover. And the butterflies you've been feeling in your chest and in your heart, the palpitation, the slight flush to your cheeks, perhaps your pussy is slightly wet. I'm sorry to talk to your lover
okay.
like this. These are all signs. The universe is leading you in the direction of one of the funniest comedians on the planet, and also someone who's about to become a mega global superstar.
Think so?
Absolutely. Fuck yeah. You're going to have your own show on HBO in no time, man. Just watch. This kind of like, they know that everyone loves your show. They know your show's great. They see it and they know it's good. They put good shit on their network.
Yeah.
What you've done for them is you've proven that their digital plan was great. Whoever was behind that HBO Go or the digital thing who came up with that guy's wearing a gold crown right now. He's like, looks like a super genius, but partially because of your fucking show. You're going to be fine. But ladies, listen. Once this hot air balloon rises up too high, Brody's going to be humping Illuminati babes in the Hamptons. So you've got this one chance. Otherwise, you're going to seem fake and false, like you're going for like you're a star fucker. Now you've got a chance. He's already a little too high, maybe. This man needs help in his apartment. He needs help and he needs some massages. More than anything, he needs to be embraced by your heavily lotioned. Do you like scented lotion?
Yeah.
By your heavily lotioned body and your beautiful feet. He wants to suck your feet. He wants to taste. You like feet?
I'm into girls' feet.
He wants to taste your feet, your toes.
They got to be clean, though.
Clean those things.
Wash them.
Wash your feet.
If you can wash them before, that would be great.
What do you want to say to her?
I want to say, hi, this is Brody. I like being with you, smelling you, lying in bed with you. You feel so good, your soft skin. I like how you take care of me. You shave my ears. You pop the pimples on my back. You drive me when I don't want to drive. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes. my sweet baby out there, here's what you do. And you're going to get some more than just one. You go to DuncanTrussell.com. You can send me a message, and I will put you in touch with Brody Stevens, and you can help him. Help him get his place in shape. He needs a lady's touch. Let's move on this.
You know what I want to do? I just kind of want to, like, get out of my apartment. I've been saying that, and I feel like I just feel a little overwhelmed with things. I can't explain it, that I wasn't overwhelmed with before. And right. And that could be part of this depression that I'm going through. It could be the medication that I'm dealing with. But I have to be on medication. I can't just stop medication because I messed up. You know, I had that episode, so I kind of have to listen to the doctors for a little bit.
Yes.
And I'm trying different meds, and it's a battle. And I'm trying to really enjoy the HBO success. It feels good. But stand-up-wise, I don't feel like doing stand-up all that much right now.
Well, you see, man, here's what it is. You're up at the top. You're at the penthouse suite of your building. You went up to the penthouse suite. Now you got to deal with the sub-basement again. You got to go in there. You got to get your fucking place fixed up now in a way that makes you feel a little more comfortable. There's something you could definitely do. One shift you could do there. You're not taking vitamins. You got to start taking vitamins again. You should be taking fish oil. Fish oil is great for depression. You should be taking fish oil. There's simple things that you could take that maybe will help you a little bit. You seem like you're working out. Are you working out?
I hike Runyon Canyon.
There you go. So that's good. But yeah, just start dealing with those little things and all the other stuff will take care of itself. You just have to deal with like the roots, you know, if you're not dealing with those. I'm just speaking from my own experience.
I feel like I want to get back to my roots.
You got to get back to your roots.
I want to get back to my roots.
What does that mean?
Well, I mean, we have a condo in the valley. I just feel like I want to go back and...
Why not? Why don't you?
Well, I can. My sister's staying there right now, but we got a couple spare rooms, and I feel like I want to go there and decompress and not be right in the center of Hollywood craziness.
Get out of there. Go to the... Why wouldn't you go do that? If you have a condo out there, go do it. I think you should do that if that's what's calling to you. Why not?
You know, we got a swimming pool. I just want to get back, even if
I'll help you move. If you need help moving, I'll help you move your stuff.
Yeah, I might want to do that. Got to talk to my sister about letting me go in there. And I lived there for 5 years, and I grew up there. So it's like...
Go.
I know it's a little bit out of the way, but it's kind of something that I need.
You got a fine car.
Yeah.
It's not that far out of the way. And that's something that's... This is the thing, man. You always get, this is the funny thing about being human and having a human biocomputer, is the biocomputer will always spit out the exact right thing, the exact right prescription for you. It always says the truth. And you know, I mean, sometimes it'll say bullshit, but you know what that voice is. But then there's what do they call it? They call it the still small voice. Mm-hmm. It's this still voice that just tells you exactly what you're supposed to do. And that voice is telling you to go move to the valley, go live with your sister, be with your family, move into a place that feels like home.
Yeah, I feel like I want to be around my family. I don't want to get all emotional, but it's been hard. I can't explain why. I don't know why all this stuff has happened. This negative, not feeling myself, you know, not having energy, not, you know, wanting to sleep all the time. I don't want to sleep right now. I'm enjoying my time here with you, but I'm just... I don't laugh. I want to laugh more. And I want to, you know, one of my friends is back in my life now, which is good. Was away for a while. Now my friend's back in my life. And, you know, I'd like to get a girlfriend, but I'm going to I know that's going to happen naturally. I just want to feel better physically and mentally.
Yeah.
And I had a physical. I have nothing wrong with me.
Well, there's a trick that you can do, man. And it's a form of like Eastern meditation. And the idea is based on a simple notion, which is you are not your thoughts and you're not even your emotional states. As strange as that is, the idea, what it does is it for a little while, you kind of create this like separation between the waves of emotion and the negativity inside of you and what you really are.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you are
I'm a funny guy. I'm a good guy. People like being around me. I was like that in college. Yes, positive energy. You got it. That's what I was. That's what I am.
Yeah.
Pushing it.
Yeah.
But I feel like I need, it's just not there anymore. I got to like, it's like, it's the reservoir needs to be built up again.
Yeah. You need love. You want to be with your family. Listen, number one, I don't care who the fuck you are. I think I could take the Dalai Lama and put him in an apartment in fucking Hollywood and he would get fucking deeply depressed after a few months there. Hollywood is a vortex of vomit. It's like living in a, it's like having an apartment in a blender on pulse that's filled with vomit.
Yeah.
It's just a vomit city. Anything west of Western is, I would rather have an apartment under a pile of hair at the Holocaust Museum than live in fucking Hollywood, man. That place is a meth-ridden hole. It's a crater filled with shitty tourists and superhero lookalikes. You don't need to be there, man.
No.
Why are you there? Get the fuck out of there. Go to the valley. Come, I got a room here. Come crash here if you want to stay in a place for a little while. Just get the fuck out of the valley.
You got a room here?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, maybe not here.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm kidding, but you could come crash here if you wanted to for a few weeks, though. Absolutely, Brody. Hell yeah. Come do it, man. But just listen to your heart.
My heart is telling me I want to go back to Tarzana, at least for a few months, at least go back. And my sister's there. I know she may not let me go there, but
you are
it's a family compound.
Right now, you are in one of the what must be one of the most precious times of your life. Your crops are growing. All those fucking years of pulling that ox through the soil,
mm-hmm.
planting seeds, working hard, being fucking courageous and fearless on stage, going through all the varieties of rejection that you went through and all the weird tumultuous shit that happened from being yourself. Now this beautiful field that you've seeded is just starting to grow crops.
And I should be enjoying it.
Yes. And that means don't live according to the way you think you should live or some game you're playing with yourself, which is like, I need to be living in Hollywood or whatever the reasons you have for living. What are the reasons you have for living in Hollywood?
It was just closer to the comedy clubs, closer to where I was going at night, basically.
So it's like what the logic behind that is like, I would rather have a creeping depression but be close to the Comedy Store, then feel stable and have to drive an extra 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Bad logic.
You're right.
You got to get to Tarzana. And then from there, once you get like stable and your stuff moved in there and you start feeling I know exactly that feeling, man. There's nothing like it. That feeling where you're like, you come home and you're like,
right.
You can relax. It's like, oh, you've just, the weight goes off your shoulders and you relax for a little while. It's healing.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get there, the next step will come. Once you get there, the next obvious move to make will come.
Yeah.
But you got to go there first.
I feel you're right because Hollywood is kind of, you said it right. It's just, you go right out into traffic. You're right in the middle of it.
Oh my God. Guys with no jaws, shaking coffee tins for change. Fucking, I've never seen a more foul city. I hate driving through there. When I just drive through Hollywood, anytime I've got to go anywhere near Hollywood, I'm hit with depression. I feel so depressed. You see all these fucks just conglomerating there because they think they should. They just, like idiots, like symmetrical cunts who just got out of their prom
yeah.
in the Midwest and immediately took a plane to Hollywood with the idea that they're going to be Brad Pitt.
Right.
There's herds of them, like zombie herds of those people wandering from acting class to bar in that area in such high proportions. It's maybe it's one of those places where like in the zombie movies where they should nuke it. Maybe they should like do a quick cleanse of the place because it's filled with such filth.
Yeah, and then you tie in the traffic. You go right into the traffic. You got the horn honk, and you got all those tourist vans everywhere, the sightseeing vans. And where are these people coming from?
If Los Angeles was a dog, Hollywood would be the part of the dog that it can't itch, where all the fleas go.
Yeah.
That just the part right above the right at the nape of their neck. You know, right where because they can't get their head around to get to it, and all the fleas just accumulate there and just nibble and suck. That's fucking Hollywood. Fucking go to Tarzana. Get the fuck out of there, Brody. It's like you're living in Chernobyl and wondering why your hair's falling out. Get the fuck out of that hole.
Is my hair falling out?
No, I mean, no. No, my hair is. No, I live in Atwater. Brody, you're the best, man.
Are we wrapping this up?
We got to wrap it up. You got to go anyway.
Yeah, I do.
You're the best. I'm so happy for your success. Please.
You know what, Duncan? You've always been there for me in terms of saying it how it needs to be said, and in understandable terms too. And you have a good energy. You get it. You've inspired me. I feel like, you've been around. You've been at the Comedy Store. You've been on the road. You've done the podcast, and you're self-aware. You're aware of other people. You got a good spirit, and I'm glad I came over here and did this podcast. And I want to get back to where I'm being, you know, positive, focused, all that stuff. And yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe the thing I walk away with today is like, I need to get back to Tarzana, even if it's just for a few months.
You need to listen to yourself. If you're getting that signal from yourself, you might be getting other things too that you need to listen to too. But I know for me, there's always a part of me that tells me the thing to do. And when I start doing it, the depression lifts,
mm-hmm.
you know, and when the depression lifts, everything opens up, you know, but you need to do that, man. You got to like go to Sweet Tarzana, go to that fucking condo, move your stuff in there, hang out by the pool.
Yeah, hang out by the pool, exercise, just get back to my roots.
Yeah, that's it. Where can the listeners find you?
They could find me on Twitter at Brody is me friend. That's on Twitter. You could email me at Brody@BrodyStevens.com. You could find me at the Comedy Store, the Laugh Factory, the Improv, certain rooms around L.A., my website is not current right now, but it needs to be, BrodyStevens.com or StephenBrodyStevens.com. It's the same thing. And I have a podcast also, the Brody Stevens Festival of Friendship, where I have people on my podcast and we talk and we do all that stuff. So positive things. Check out my show. I think you'll enjoy it. It's called Brody Stevens. Enjoy it. It's on HBO Go. And I'm proud of it. And hopefully there'll be a season 2. We'll see about that. And just keep pushing with positivity.
Love you, Brody. The links to everything will be at DuncanTrussell.com. Go check it out. See you, Brody. Thanks so much.
You got it.
You are listening to A Minor Place by Bonnie Prince Billy from his album I See a Darkness. Available on iTunes. Bonnie Prince Billy is incredible.
If I am gone and with no trace I will be in my minor place. Will I put the shoes in line, separate the women and mine, as we do what we do fine, so victorious, so benign. Well, I've been to a minor place, and I can say I like its pace. If I am gone and with no trace, I will be in my minor place. Only take the weather and the job that does me harm, since the scars of last year's storm rest like maggots on my arm. Well, I've been to a minor place, and I can say I like its face. If I am gone and with no trace, I will be in my minor place. Thank you, man, if for the thought that all my loving can be bought was wisely in your gullet caught before my loyalty you saw. Well, I've been to a minor place, and I can say I like its face. If I am gone and with no trace, I will be in my minor place. Oh, it's not a desert, nor a web, nor a tomb where I lay dead, minor in a sound alone, yes, a clear commanding tone, singing from my little point and aching in my every joint. I thank the world it will anoint me if I show it how